Compassion Plans, Episode 18, Improv Builds Compassion.
The world we live in is far from perfect. How can I effectively make a difference? This is Compassion Plans, a weekly interview to help you make the world a better place with your host, Bentley Davis.
Welcome to Compassion Plans. I'm Bentley Davis, and today I have Gary Ware from BreakthroughCocktail.com. Welcome to the show, Gary.
Hey, welcome. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
Gary, I like starting off by talking about compassion, because that's what the show is about. Some people say it's easing other people's pain. So what type of pain do you ease?
Yeah, I totally agree. Compassion is about recognizing suffering and doing something to help. I personally have a passion for doing improv comedy to be specific. And in learning how to do improv and the principles of doing that, I've learned a lot of techniques that helps me to be more compassionate. The first principle about doing improv is listening. I feel a lot of people, when they listen, they only listen enough to get their point across. And through improv, it's taught me to listen with your whole body and to not just listen for points that will help you, you know, talk forward. It's just to listen to their mood, to everything about that. And from that, it's taught me to really be present in the moment and find opportunities to help someone out. And sometimes that's as simple as just smiling or realizing that someone, you know, needs help. Maybe they need just some cheering up. And that's one of the things that I like to do is just, you know, be present and help people.
Yeah, a lot of times when people are going through a hard time and you want to comfort them, the initial thing, it's like, well, what do I say? And what I hear you saying is that it's not even about what you say. It's more just your presence in that moment.
Correct.
And listening, letting them work through whatever's going on in their life by talking through it. Sounds great. Now, I think most of us have seen improv comedy thanks to the popularity of Whose Line Is It Anyway and some other shows similar to that, which you have to be kind of fast. Your energy level has to be kept up usually to keep the momentum of the moment. How are you able to listen to what your co-presenter, co-comedian, is doing so that you can riff off that, but still keep your mind going on the next joke? I guess maybe you don't even formulate the next joke till you fully hear. And sometimes it's not a joke because sometimes you'll be more the straight guy in the situation or whatever. But I'm just curious, maybe you could talk through in your experience kind of how that works.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people are intimidated about doing improv because they think that you need to be extremely witty and you need to be on your feet. And by practicing improv and learning improv, you develop that skill. But one of the first things about improv, it's not about being funny. It's through improv in comparison to stand-up comedy, as you mentioned, we do not have any material that is preconceived, pre-written down. It's all made up through a group. Mm-hmm. And in order to do that, there's a few principles that I'll share with you and your listeners. And the first principle is yes and. When we do improv, we're telling a story. So you agree that with your fellow players, with your fellow improvisers, if someone says something, you're going to agree 110%, and then you're going to build on that. So for example, if we're doing a scene and you tell me that, hey, Gary, this spaceship is mighty cold, I'm not going to deny that. I'm going to agree and support you 110%. And then on top of that, I'm going to build. I'm going to say, yeah, it's cold in here. Hopefully we get to Mars soon or something like that. I'm just throwing mm-hmm. things out there.
Right.
But that, just that whole concept of yes and is how we start to tell our stories. And by learning that, you actually can take that principle of yes and into your everyday life. Too often we're quick to say no and we're quick to deny someone of something. There's just something about saying yes to someone and accepting them, no matter what it is, and building on top of that. So that's the first principle. It just helps us to, you know, just to keep going. And with improv, everything's a gift. So there's nothing that I can say that is a mistake. And even when it does come out a mistake, we go with that because it's not going to be as funny. It's not going to be as entertaining if we're just bickering and arguing on stage.
Right.
So that's the first principle. And from that, that's where a lot of the comedy comes, because even calling out some of the things that are silly, because we are making things up and we have this group mind and we're telling this story, that's where the audience can relate to it. The second principle of improv is just being able to listen. I talked about that, so I'm not going to get into that, but listening to your scene partner and getting out of your head. Too often we are trying to think of that witty line. And if you listen and you're in the moment, those lines are presented to you and you just respond to them. And then to the audience, it just seems like it's magic. It seems like that we are scripting all of this. And I've had so many people come up to me after an improv performance and say, wow, did you guys write that? And I say, no, we've created this on the spot. This is something that is magical that you're never going to experience again as a one-time thing. And just knowing that and just being okay with failure and just moving forward, it's helped me in my life tremendously.
So, yeah, we do often think about it as improv comedy, but if you're teaching someone improv, is the goal to be funny, or is the goal more of role playing and teaching the and you know, listening to your partner?
Yeah, that is the goal. The first thing that we tell people is do not try to be funny.
Yeah.
Because when you try to be funny, just like when you try to do anything really hard, it's going to be awkward. I know for myself in the beginning, after watching Whose Line Is It Anyway, and people like Wayne Brady, who is
right.
extremely talented, I just have this perception like, wow, they are just so witty and they have all these punchlines. In the beginning, I was struggling because I was trying to be funny. I was trying so hard to be funny and it just wasn't working. Reason being is I wasn't listening. I wasn't accepting my scene player. I was in my head. And too often in life, we're spending so much time in our head. We're wondering about what people are going to think of me, and I need to have this perfect line, and we are missing, you know, the world, and everything is just going past us, and we're missing opportunities to actually live and be in the now. So with improv, we first stop and say, let's just be present, let's tell stories, and let's just take it from our own experiences and put that out there. And as I mentioned before, you have to be okay with failing. In the beginning, there's so many times when we're just experimenting. We do these exercises that they seem kind of silly, but the cool thing about these exercises is we're all being silly together. And so it breaks down any barriers of, oh man, I look weird. I'm doing something awkward on stage, but we're all doing it together and we're a team. And from that, we start to tell these stories, and the humor comes from people relating to these stories. One of the scenes that I've done recently, it's just a simple scene about two roommates. But from this, each player, you know, does an initiation and we're having a conversation. But from that, we're starting to impart some real life scenarios that everyone can relate to. And that's where the funny comes, is I am put in scenes that I don't even know about. I was put into a carpenter scene. I've never been a carpenter, but what I do know is I know relationships. I know relationships between employees because I've seen it in my own life and on TV, and I play with that. And so we play with statuses. So someone can come in and they're the boss, and then we're just talking about stuff, and then I'm responding. And then that's where the humor is coming out, because everyone can relate to a situation where the boss is like on The Office, a Michael Scott type character, where he's completely absurd. The comedy is just calling that out. And we're not trying to be witty. We're just telling this story, and then the audience is loving it.
Do you, when you're starting out, do you kind of give the, especially the new people, permission to have some silence in there?
Yes. We do this exercise to get our fellow improvisers a chance to listen and slow down. We're just doing a dialogue scene. And before you can speak, you have to repeat the line that the person said before you.
Oh, wow.
And so we're still doing this yes and. So someone's going to do initiation, and we'll get a suggestion of two relationships. It could be mother and son. It could be anything. And then the first person initiates and they say something. It could be son I've noticed that your grades are slipping today. And then the next scene, the next player has to repeat that and say, son, I noticed that your grades are slipping today. And then they can speak. And by doing that, it allows them to really internalize what they're saying.
Oh, that's really good. So what got you started on improvisation?
My day job, I work in marketing. I work for an advertising agency, and I've been doing that for quite some time. And through that, I have to speak in front of clients. I speak on behalf of the company at conferences. And I've done a number of things to help my public speaking. I've done Toastmasters. I've done private coaching. And they've all helped me in so many different ways. And I was looking for something else, something that was a bit fun, that will help me build on the skill. And someone said, hey, Gary, you should give improv a try. And like you, I immediately thought, is it anyway? And I was thinking, I don't know if I'm funny enough or witty enough to do this, but sure, I'll give it a shot. You know, what's the worst that can happen? And I have to say it was one of the best things that happened to me, because working in the agency business, it can be very stressful. It's very fast paced. And I went to a class. It was on a Monday night. It was 2 hours, and we just played. It seems like we were just playing for 2 hours. And that was so much fun, to just leave all of your baggage after a long day at the door and come in, and you're doing these exercises that do not seem like you're learning anything from them. They're so much fun. You're being silly. And we don't do enough of that. When we're growing up and when we're a kid, we play a lot, and we use our imaginations, and it's so much fun. But what ends up happening is we grow up, and then we start doing work, and work to some people is not fun. And what improv did, it taught me to actually have fun again and to experiment and be okay with failure. And that, after I did that one class, I was hooked, because it was so much fun. Little did I know, I was actually learning a lot, not just with my public speaking, but just with my everyday life. And I was being more compassionate. I was being more grateful. I was helping people. And I was being okay with things that are happening to me. And if I had a bad day at work, I said, you know what? It's just one day. You shake it off. Or if I'm in a meeting and the client says something that is like a curveball, I was not expecting it, I learned to just internalize that and just roll with the punches.
So you found it, you know, someone kind of challenging you to it and stuff like that. How did it change from that to, or, you know, tell us a little bit about Breakthrough Cocktail.
So I've been doing improv for about 3, going on 4 years now. And also in parallel with that, I had been doing a lot of mentoring. Being in the advertising field here in San Diego, there's a lot of networking groups, one of which is the San Diego Ad Club. And I was the president of the Young Professionals Group. One of the roles as president is to be a mentor. I spoke at a number of different colleges in the area, and I interacted with members of other chapters in other cities. One of the first things that happens when someone comes to San Diego or they graduate and they're in marketing advertising, they become part of the group, and I sit down, I have coffee with them. I try to find out, well, what are their intentions? What are they looking to do? And it's always, hey, I'm looking to network with people. Can you help introduce me? I'm trying to find a job. Or sometimes someone is saying, well, I'm in a job and this doesn't feel like the right job. I am trying to find another job. Being that it's a very competitive landscape, can you give me some advice? Can you help me network and find someone that is going to see my strength and hopefully give me a job? Doing that for a while, I started seeing that there's a lot of trends. There was a lot of people that had similar problems. They're trying to find their passion. They're stuck in a job. And then I'm doing this improv, and I'm realizing that improv is actually helping me with my own struggles and find my own passion. And so then, after being president for 2 years, I was missing that. I felt that was something that was very rewarding to me, is helping people find their passion, helping people navigate. So I wanted to do more. And I worked with a business coach that helped me uncover that of, hey, this is something that you should try. And And dude, so that's how Breakthrough Cocktail was formed. I started doing some local workshops in San Diego where I would incorporate improv exercises mixed with goal setting, visioning, and the whole group aspect of being accountable with the fellow people in the group. People were finding success. People were happier. And I wanted to give that gift to more people. So I started doing online group coaching, online workshops, and that's pretty much how Breakthrough Cocktail started. And then recently, I started doing a podcast because I realized I'm just one person. There are so many people out there that have remarkable stories that are going to inspire people, and I want to hear those stories and share those stories with my audience.
So is that mostly going to be the theme of your podcast? Interviewing inspiring people?
Yeah, that's one aspect. The other aspect is having just inspiring messages. So it's going to be a twice a week podcast. On Mondays, it's going to be an interview with someone to hear their stories, to hear their struggles, to hopefully inspire my audience. And then on Wednesdays, I will share just a quick message with some practical advice to help the audience continue to overcome struggles, continue to help them find their passion. I like to incorporate improv into this as a way to show people the parallels. So for example, improv's helped me to fail. So I will talk about that and give the audience some exercises that they can do to help them fail more as a way to learn more.
How long have you been kind of doing the Breakthrough Cocktail overall?
Yeah, Breakthrough Cocktail is relatively new. It's going to be a year in December of 2014. And as I mentioned, I started out by just doing local workshops just to find out, is this something that I want to do? I knew this was something that I was missing in my life. And I loved mentoring. I love coaching. And from that, people, the audience came to me and said, all right, what's next? This was so much fun. And one of the best comments that someone told me was that this was the happiest day of the week for them. We would come, we would have fun, and then they would go throughout their week on cloud nine and able to deal with issues that come up and it doesn't faze them. And then through the week, you know, they're getting back around and, you know, that is sort of waning. And then the next week comes around and then we boost them back up again. It's very touching and I love doing that. So I was working with a coach. I still am working with a coach on how do I continue to give this gift of happiness and these lessons out to the masses. And so through the website, the primary vehicle is through coaching. I have a number of different coaching options from private coaching, one-on-one, and then one-on-one aspect where you're trying to either get another job or you're trying to work on happiness or public speaking or something of that nature. And it's just on a one-on-one basis to the group aspect where we meet every other week online via Skype to just work things out. And everyone is bringing something else to the table. There are a number of people working on different things, whether it be side businesses, whether it be trying to get a job, and we incorporate different lessons as a group. And then we have everyone sort of talk about what their struggles and we work it out as a team.
And you mentioned you have another kind of day job. Is it a goal of yours to have this being something that you can support yourself off of, or will this always be a side gig?
Yes, that is my goal. And being realistic, I don't want to do something that is going to sacrifice the initial intention of giving this gift.
Mm-hmm.
And so I am fortunate that I have a full-time job that supports the fact that I am mentoring and I'm giving back to our community. And that allows me to take my time and do this the right way. I can only imagine if I was thrown in and so many people do it and they thrive. So I'm not saying anything against that, but sometimes that makes you second guess your intentions because you have to You have to feed a family. You have to make ends meet. Sometimes you have to sacrifice things to do that. And I'm fortunate that I do not have to do that. So I want to build this organically, and there is no rush, but I am saying within the next, 2 to 3 years, this is going to be something that I'm going to do, full time.
That's good for us to hear, because I think when almost everyone listening to this podcast wants to have a life that has a greater impact on society and people around, a greater positive impact, and hearing your struggles with, how do I make sure that I'm not in the need to make money corrupting my compassion? It's good for us to hear that other people are challenged with that, and how, keeping your full-time job has been part of the solution to that. So you're not in a needy situation and thus end up making some questionable decisions.
Exactly. And it is a struggle from time to time. And what that causes me to do is prioritize.
Mm-hmm.
And one would say it's contradictory to the art of improv is saying no. However, by me saying no to things that are not aligned with my bigger vision, mm-hmm. it's allowing me to say yes to the things that are. I'm a very giving person, and I am one to say yes to just about anything. I don't like saying no. And by saying yes, it opens you up to so many different opportunities.
Right.
But it doesn't necessarily mean that I'm saying no and I am discounting it or rejecting it. I'm just saying no right now because there's something else that is going on.
That's important to be able to do and to make that distinction. And to also trust that, you're going to say yes to some wrong things and no to some wrong things. And that's okay. Like you said, dealing with failure.
Exactly. And one thing on that is you just have to sometimes just jump out and have faith that things are going to work out. When I do improv weekly, we start out by getting a single suggestion. And then we do is like a 30-minute one-act play. We have faith that we are going to survive. And sometimes it's not as glamorous as it was previous weeks, but that's okay. I can live with that.
How does improv affect our compassion and how we work with others?
In improv, we do a lot of character exercises, and you tend to get in a rut of playing the same character a lot, which is based on your own worldview. And that is how we start everything. Because a lot of times people don't know how to do characters and they get very wacky, and then the scene goes all over the place and it's not necessarily very entertaining or enjoyable. So we start by saying, how would you honestly respond to a situation like that? Then you get very good at that. And then we start saying, all right, I want to challenge you. I want you to take on a different persona, something that is the complete polar opposite of you. And it really focus you, causes you to really think about how you would respond and how would someone that has a different point of view, how would they respond to it? And from that, I feel people can get compassion because it makes you put yourself in someone else's shoes.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. That's that you kind of get that inbuilt empathy because you have to think what they would be thinking.
Yeah.
It's even harder to do it in a rational way because sometimes people will kind of take that thing and they'll just kind of go, like, if you're playing someone who has a different philosophy as far as like a political philosophy, if you're a Republican and you say act like a Democrat, and they're gonna be like, they're just walk over and hug a tree and just stay there, to take it too far. But when they're put in a situation where they really have to do it a lot, you're kind of forced to think, well, how would their reaction to the situation make their worldview do it? But let's say you're playing an intelligent Democrat or, intelligent Republican, whatever your opposite is, that's even more challenging because you almost have to really understand their point of view to do it without coming off as just being silly.
Yeah, and you bring up a good point. And that is something with improv that's where the creativity comes from, because you're right. In the beginning, we want people to fail and we want people to experiment. And so when we do character stuff like that, just so they can get comfortable doing it. People tend to do the whack. Like if we say, all right, you're going to play a Democrat. All right. You know, and then you start thinking of, well, what is that archetype? You know, what are the extremes? Because that is the only thing that you can think of. And then we can say, all right, you got that. You know, good job. You know, applaud. You know, we're all about rewarding and very positive sort of outcome. And then I say, I want to challenge you. And then I start to put constraints around it. And that's where the creativity comes from, is through the constraints. Because to say, all right, now I want you to play someone that has a different point of view of you. But the constraint is they cannot be completely wacky. They have to be a rational person. And then the challenge is, all right, how do you play that? And then, you know, in the beginning, it's all about going slow. You know, just to, you know, all right, how will we do that? And we would brainstorm a lot of stuff just to give them some tools so that they can start to, you know, paint that out. Because at this point, this is improv, advanced improv. So you, in muscle memory, you have the basic components of a scene. You know how to do a scene, and every scene starts with, you know, initiation that within the first three lines, we like to establish who are we to each other, where are we, and what's our deal. Within the first three lines, you know, back and forth dialogue, we like to do that, and then we can explore. So once you are good at that and you have that in muscle memory, you can initiate a scene and go off. So then now the next challenge is, now how do you have this different worldview? But as to set our players up for success, we tend to brainstorm it first, where we would say, all right, who are you trying to partake? And then we start to say, well, what are some characteristics of that person? And then we start to brainstorm, and then other people sort of chime in. And then we start to do some exercises to say, you know, use your imagination. What would that person be doing on a Friday night? Yeah. And the good thing about improv, there are no wrong answers. So it's getting you to get out of your head and just think of the first thing that comes to your mind, because that is right. And then we start to say, all right, if they have kids, you know, what is that like? Or are they married? Are they not married? And then you start to paint the picture of this person. And then we say, all right, you got it. Now let's do a scene. And you're right. It challenges you to think differently. And then from that, I just having this conversation to sort of spark that, but it will get you to have compassion for someone that you might not have, you know, had that compassion for, because you start to see the extreme examples. But if you start to see them as just a normal person that happens to have a different point of view than you, then yeah, you can start to see it from all angles and have a true understanding and be okay with the fact that you don't agree on certain things. That does not make them any less of a person.
Right. Yeah, that is really good. I'm going to have to think more about that for my dialogue and deliberation.
Yeah.
So since you've been doing this, has there been a lesson you've learned the hard way that you can share with us so we can learn it through you?
Yes. I think the first thing is taking on too much.
Mm-hmm.
As I mentioned, improvisers are very generous. If you meet an improviser, that person will be your best friend, and they will be the most supportive person you ever meet. The double-edged sword of that is sometimes we take on too many things. When I originally started doing this, I still do improv. I'm on two different teams at a theater in San Diego called Finest City Improv. But at the time I was on three or four teams. I worked full time. I was trying to put this together on the side, part of various marketing organizations, and I can feel that burnout coming. And one of the things that I've learned through improv is just be self-aware, because far too often we miss these cues that our body is giving us that, hey, hello, things aren't right. We start by probably not getting enough sleep, or we're not eating right, or other things. But because we're not present, we miss these cues. And I was taking on way too much, and I wasn't sleeping enough, and I wasn't spending enough time with family. And I noticed that I wasn't as happy as I could have been. And then I took a moment to pause and reflect. And then I had to make a tough decision of, all right, these are all great things. I'm doing a lot of awesome things, but I can only do so much. And then it's, well, what is not serving me in the current state? And those things had to be put on the back burner or just canceled altogether. So I had to have some really, in my head, they were really tough conversations. I was thinking, oh my gosh, I'm going to be disappointing these people because I originally said that I can do this and I'm realizing I can't. But what I learned was it wasn't as bad as I thought. And in fact, the people that I had these conversations with to say that, hey, I cannot fulfill my commitment anymore and I'm going to have to step down, they said, wow, thank you for being honest. And I thought you were a robot. I didn't think you could physically do all of this. So it's refreshing to know that, hey, you are human. And thank you for being honest. Granted, I wish that all those conversations that went that way, some of them, some people were a little disappointed and upset, but I had to learn, you know what? That is their response. And I cannot control how they respond. All I can control is myself.
Yeah, that's a really good lesson. Yeah, that's several lessons in there. It wasn't just one. But yeah, dealing with other people's disappointment and realizing that those are reactions, and also knowing when to say when and how to prioritize and focus.
Yeah, and that's something that, you know, to this day is up. You know, you have your ups and downs because your life changes. At some point, everything, it made sense to do all of that, and you could do all of that. But then other things happen. Your outlook changes, the priorities, the things that are important to you changes. And a lesson that I can give your audience is you should have times that you set aside to yourself to reflect either on goals or priorities, and then find out, you know, does all of this serve me and what I'm doing right now? Because at any given moment, yeah, it all made sense, but sometimes we take on too much, and then by reflecting, you can find out, well, you know, what is not allowing me to continue to be happy? Because if you want to have compassion, if you want to give your gift to others and support others, you have to first be compassionate with yourself and have self-compassion. And if you're taking on too much, you can't give your gift.
Is there anything that's been really slowing you down?
Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily. Yeah, I'll go with that. Slowing me down, I feel my own thoughts, my own head. I get in my own way a lot. Mm-hmm. And that is either by comparing myself to others and saying, oh, wow, look at them. They, you know, they have, it seems like they have it all together. And they must have a huge audience and they're able to give back so much. Or just getting down on myself and saying, man, I should be moving faster. And when I do that, I have to stop and have some positive self-talk and say, hey, you know, you're doing the right thing. You are going on your own pace, and it's going to be a detriment to yourself if you constantly compare yourself to others, because I only see what's on the surface. I have no idea, you know, what is going on under the hood. And a lot of people that I'm comparing myself to, they've been around for a while. So this is how they are now. And so instead of just getting down on myself that I'm not there yet, say, hey, I have something to look forward to.
Yeah, that's a challenging thing, because I do believe you do need to be aware of the other people that are doing similar things or even other things. It's nice to have kind of a ruler to see whether you're within reasonable bounds of your level of success is probably the wrong word. Maybe impact.
Correct.
But it can be disheartening because, like you said, I mean, that's a big thing they say about Facebook these days, is that people tend to get depressed more because you're seeing all these great things happening to other people. And many times people are not talking about the challenges that they go through it. And another thing that you mentioned about how there's kind of highs and lows, you think you just touched on that briefly. But something I don't think we talk about a lot when you're starting your own business is that it is very much an emotional roller coaster.
Yeah, agreed. And that is, it's a journey. And I don't know who exactly said this, so I'm going to do my best to paraphrase. Mm-hmm. If you focus on the endpoint, the goal, you're you're just going to be disappointed when you get there, because then you have this next endpoint. But in fact, you should just be mindful and just focus on the journey. It's all about the journey of getting there. Whatever your goal is, whether it be to start your own business, to lose weight, to find another job, if all that you think about is that end goal and you're not mindful and in the present and thinking about that journey and being curious about the journey and enjoying the ups and the downs, then when you hit that, when you make that mark, all that's going to happen is you're just going to continue to raise the bar and you're going to put your happiness second. And then you're always going to be chasing happiness and you're never going to be fulfilled because you're always going to have this next bar.
Yeah, I'm trying to think if it's taking a moment and appreciating where you are instead of always focusing on a specific goal. But also, and if your goal is a little bit more compassion-based, my goal is to help more people, then you can look at, well, where am I? Well, there's all these people that I've helped. And even if I don't, you know, I would, and I'll put words in your mouth, you can tell me whether it's true or not, you know, even if you couldn't make this into a full business, it's still the amount of people that you have helped so far, the people that you've inspired, the people that you've given these new tools to, is really a wonderful thing to be proud of.
Exactly. And you bring up a really good point, Bentley, that it's good to look forward and it keeps us moving forward, but we forget about the impact that we made thus far. Mm-hmm. And when we're in a point where we're stuck because we want to help people and we all have big hearts and we all want to help so much, and that's great. And then when we don't feel like we're giving enough, we get down on ourselves. And sometimes it's important to look back and say, you know what? I've helped a lot of people so far. And sometimes if you just helped one person, that is one more than you've done previously. And that one person is probably so grateful that you've helped them.
The Compassion Plans audience really likes helping the guests out. What are two things that we can do to help you in your goal of helping people?
I'm all about pay it forward. Yes, I have Breakthrough Cocktail. And if someone's interested and want to learn more, you can definitely go to the website and we can learn about improv together. What I would like everyone to be mindful of is just, you know, having compassion for yourself and having compassion for others. I recently had the pleasure of working with a gal by the name of Sarah Shire, and she has a project called Compassionate, and her goal is to make compassion a verb. And I got one of her Compassionate bracelets, which it's one of the first bracelets that it's a reversible action-focused bracelet. So in the morning, you start with the black side up. And once you do something of compassion, either for yourself or for others, you flip it to the white side. So it's a daily reminder of being compassionate.
Wow.
And so the first thing that I want people to do is to just try to be mindful and find ways that you can be compassionate to others. And it can be as simple as smiling and realizing that someone could use a little pick-me-up. So that's the first thing. And it could be, you know, that could be something simple, and it could be as big as buying someone lunch, or if you're walking down the street. This is one of my favorite things to do. Is I live in San Diego and I work in downtown, and there's a lot of meters around. And sometimes, and I know for my own self, you get stuck in a meeting or you get stuck in this enjoyable conversation and you forget that you need to go pay the meters. Mm-hmm. Well, those meter maids are very relentless and they are quick to give someone a ticket. So, you know, if you happen to be walking around and you happen to see that someone needs change in the meter, you know, that's throw some money in there. You could be saving someone's day and making it, you know, giving a smile on the face, whether they realize it or not, you know it. And you can, you know, be grateful for that. But the second thing, and I probably should have did this first, is to be more mindful.
Mm-hmm.
Because in order to give compassion, you have to be more mindful. You have to be in the present. Because if you are not living in the present, these opportunities are going to pass you by. So a good way to be more mindful is to work on meditation. Well, it doesn't have to be the whole Om thing, you know, where you spend 20 minutes, you know, 30 minutes at a time, that might be intimidating to people, but just work on being in the now, whatever you're doing.
That's some great advice there. So if people wanted to contact you and find out more, the best way is through the website?
Yes, and that's www.breakthroughcocktail.com. If you are interested in learning more, I advise everyone to sign up for our newsletter. On the homepage, there is a sign up, and as a thank you for signing up, I have a little ebook of 5 things that you can do right now to be happier. Very simple tips. And it's been proven that by following these tips, you know, picking 1 or 2 of them and making it a habit over 21 days, you will increase your happiness level. Even in your family, if you've been, your family are pessimists and normally have a negative outlook on life, by doing some of these habits over the process of 21 days, you can go from a pessimist to a low-level optimist.
Excellent. I'm sure that'll be helpful. I'm going to go sign up right now.
Awesome. Yeah. And then I have the podcast that you can find out on the website as well.
Well, Gary, I really appreciate your time. I appreciate your passion to help people out, and that you're spreading just a compassionate way of living through improv and through coaching.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for having me on the show. I really appreciate it.
And thank you so much for listening. Get the links and notes for today's show at compassionplans.com/18. Never miss an episode by entering your email into our subscription list while you're there. If you appreciate what we're doing, go to compassionplans.com/appreciate to find out how you can spread compassion by rating and reviewing this podcast on iTunes. Thank you so much for caring.